The health department still not worried over the slight increase in COVID cases in the Philippines. Russia tells Ukrainian forces hold up in a chemical plant in Severodonetsk to surrender. A gun ban set to be implemented in Metro Manila and Davao City for the inaugurations of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Vice President-elect Sara Duterte Carpio. And dozens of farmers and their supporters arrested in Tarlac will seek the dismissal of the cases against them. Later on in the program, we'll speak to Commission on Human Rights spokesperson Jacqueline De Guia on their probe into the arrest of the Tinang 83. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, the increase in COVID cases in the Philippines, not yet a cause for alarm. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergeres says the country's average daily attack rate is still below one. She adds COVID hospitalizations also remain low since most cases reported are mild and asymptomatic. Instead of panicking, Vergeres says the latest uptick in infections should spur people to get their booster shots.
And we know that these infections will still happen because the virus is here to stay. Mm-hmm. But ang sinasabi nga po natin, we are seeing that the severe and critical ay medyo stable tayo ngayon. It's not increasing. And also our hospitals, no, are not getting overwhelmed. But I just like to caution everybody. Mm-hmm. Because of this waning immunity that we have right now, because of the slow uptake in our boosters, mm-hmm. there is this projection that maybe it might happen, no, that by August, our hospitalizations will increase and there would be more severe and critical cases.
The Okta Research Group had warned daily infections in Metro Manila alone could hit 400 to 500 by the end of June. Meanwhile, House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Joey Salceda warns around 640,000 households in Metro Manila could go hungry if the area is again placed under COVID alert level 2.
Pag ginawa nila alert to niya, 640,000 families in Metro Manila will go hungry. And I can prove that to them. O sige, ikakamatay, ano ikakamatay mo? Yung 1,240 na COVID na ang hospitalization rate mo, wala pang 5%. So kaya naman palang ano yun, i-prevent yung deaths. O yung mamatay ka dahil sa hunger. Dahil po dyan sa alert 2 na yan, we need to abolish all this alert system. Because it's only doing the economy harm, but it's not improving our health outcomes.
A group of employers also warning against placing Metro Manila under COVID alert level 2. The Employers Confederation of the Philippines says it will hamper government's economic recovery efforts and cause job losses.
Sabi ko, yung uptick na yan, hindi naman dapat masyadong pansinin dahil napakamahal ng mga cases na yan. At hindi naman na dumadami siguro na mamatay. Baka mas marami pa na mamamatay sa gutom kaysa na pinansin natin yan. Pwede, huwag na lang natin masyadong pagkasaya ng panahon yan. Okay. At tuloy-tuloy ang pag-normalize. At ang mga tao natin kailangan na talaga magtrabaho. Mga bata kailangan talaga mag-aaral. Ang pagbutihin yung mga hospital natin, siguraduhin na tuloy-tuloy ang pagdadagdag ng facilities, gamit, at yung asikasuhin yung mga nurses natin para hindi ka tayo kukulangin kung sakali.
Metro Manila's COVID vaccination drive gets a shot in the arm as the capital region records more infections. Cities like Makati and Mandaluyong have augmented their vaccination team personnel to cater to an increase in demand for the jabs.
Around 700 to 1,500 po ang nababakunahan natin every day po. Previous po natin is mga less than 1,000 po ang mga nagpapabakunay. Isang factor na rin po siguro yung nakita po na tumataas ang mga cases, nagkaroon na rin po ng urgency sa mga tao na magpabakunan.
Needed kasi sa trabaho nila, hinahanap pa na sila ng booster cards. Yung iba kasi natatakot na din. Yung sa bata, ma'am, usually kasi more on malapit na kasi yung face-to-face classes natin. Then requirement kasi yung bakuna nila for graduation.
Despite this development, the government is still more than 7 million short of its June 30 target to fully vaccinate 70% of the population against COVID. The province of Cebu toughens its stand on relaxing the face mask mandate. The provincial board passed an ordinance making it optional to use face masks outdoors. Cebu Governor Gwen Garcia previously issued an executive order requiring masks only for indoor spaces and for persons with possible COVID symptoms. Malacañang pushed back against the Cebu ordinance. It emphasized the national mask or face mask mandate still prevails. The health department fears the easing of mask rules would make the public too complacent.
In our current protocols, we already have exemptions as to the wearing of the mask. Ang sinasabi po natin ngayon, if you as a local government would announce that to the public, that might be very risky.
Okay.
Especially now that we are having this increase in cases, especially now that sub-variants have entered the country, especially now that the country has waning immunity. Parang nalilegitimize po ba na
maaari hindi pagsuot ng mask?
Yes, and which is, so even though that they say that, oh, dito lang naman sa amin gagawin yan eh. Eh pero nagkocross tayo ng borders, everybody's traveling. So...
The province of Quirino also considering easing the mask mandate, but Governor Dakila Cuas says policymakers should look at the science first before making any decision.
Sana ang pinag-usapan dito ay hindi yung aspect of which will prevail, the EO or the IATF, but which is really the right policy for the for the health safety of our people, di ba? Mm-hmm. So, bukang nakakalimutan pag-usapan yung data at yung science. So sa tingin ko po, yung optional wearing of face mask might be, and probably will be, the way of the future. Mm-hmm. But we're failing to talk about what are the parameters or what are the indicators that will guide us towards that decision. Instead, pinag-uusapan natin, sino man tama, kayo ba or kami.
Cua insists any policy shift would still depend on the recommendation of health experts. The governor acknowledged the risk connected with the uptick in Metro Manila's COVID cases. Canada scraps the COVID vaccination requirement for domestic and outbound travelers. The new policy takes effect next week. Travelers entering Canada, meanwhile, must continue to show proof of vaccination. Those departing the country will no longer need to do so. The country's transport minister cites the high rate of inoculations and the declining number of COVID cases and hospitalizations nationwide. More than 90% of Canadians have received two COVID vaccine doses, while about half have also received a booster. Advisors to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration overwhelmingly back Moderna's COVID vaccine for children aged 6 to 17. After weighing available data, 22 experts agreed the benefits of Moderna's jab outweigh the risks. Formal authorization will soon follow. The approval was delayed due to concerns it caused rare cases of heart inflammation. So far, Pfizer-BioNTech's COVID jab is the only brand that was given the green light for teens and younger children. The World Health Organization set to hold an emergency meeting next week to determine whether to classify the global monkeypox outbreak as a public health emergency of international concern. WHO Chief Tedros Ghebreyesus says the outbreak of monkeypox is unusual and concerning. The agency is also working with partners and experts from around the world to change the name of the virus and the disease it causes to address the stigma surrounding it. Back here at home, the mayor of Balete in Batangas raises the alarm over the presence of arsenic in the municipality's water supply. Our correspondent Dennis Dato now joins us with details. Dennis, what more can you tell us?
Carmina, Mayor Wilson Morales has declared health events of public health concerns in Balete, Batangas, after water sources such as water pumps and water wells in five barangays tested positive for arsenic content that caused cancer. According to Mayor Malalit, the decision was based on the recommendations of the Municipal Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council, or MDRRMO, in compliance with Republic Act 11332, or the mandatory reporting of notifiable diseases and health events of public concern act. The local government has also distributed potable water to the estimated 1,000 affected residents in the town of Balete. The water were donated by Ayala Foundation, Manila Water, and Makati Development Corporation. The local chief executive assured the public that the fishes from Taal Lake, such as tilapia or bagus, are safe to eat based on the assessment of Bureau of Fisheries and Aquatic Resources. Meanwhile, the Philippine Nuclear Research Institute, or PNRI, has collected water samples from the water district and other water sources where the arsenic contamination occurred. This includes the towns of Agoncillo, Laurel, and San Nicolas. The results of the testing will be released after 2 months. Carmina.
Yes, Dennis, a couple of questions for you before we let you go. What are the authorities they're looking at as the possible sources of this contamination?
The arsenic contamination is caused by the eruption of Taal volcano, Carmina.
All right. And did they tell you about how they can possibly clean up the water supply?
Well, some local government units are now preparing to purchase arsenator, a machine being used to test if the water is positive for arsenic chemical. And also they will also buy a reverse osmosis machine so that they can process the water to remove arsenic chemical in water. Carmina.
All right. Thanks a lot. Dennis Dato there joining us on the line back here in the newsroom. Russia tells Ukrainian forces hold up in a chemical plant in the besieged city of Severodonetsk to lay down their arms. More than 500 civilians are trapped alongside soldiers inside the chemical factory. Russia said fighters should surrender by 8 a.m. Moscow time, and civilians would be allowed to escape through a humanitarian corridor. The plant's bombardment echoes earlier battles over the Azovstal steelworks in Mariupol, where hundreds of fired make that fighters and civilians took shelter from Russian shelling. NATO urges Western countries to send Ukraine more heavy weaponry as it battles Russia's advance in the east. NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg made that call during a meeting with several European leaders. Poland's prime minister echoing that call while criticizing the West for not doing enough to support Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Tuesday his troops need anti-missile weapons.
They absolutely depend on that to be able to stand up against a brutal Russian invasion. But we need to be prepared for a long haul. There is no way we can predict how and when this war will end, but we need to be prepared to continue for a long time to continue to provide support.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, Philippine authorities beef up security measures ahead of the inaugurations of President-elect Bongbong Marcos and Vice President-elect Sara Duterte Carpio. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The health department still not worried over the slight increase in COVID cases in the Philippines. Russia tells Ukrainian forces hold up in a chemical plant in Severodonetsk to surrender. A gun ban is set to be implemented in Metro Manila and Davao City for the inaugurations of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Vice President-elect Sara Duterte Carpio. And dozens of farmers and their supporters arrested in Tarlac will seek the dismissal of cases against them. Back with more news, the Philippine National Police will implement a gun ban during the inauguration of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Vice President-elect Sara Duterte Carpio. It will take effect in Metro Manila on June 27 until July 2 for the oath-taking of Marcos at the National Museum on June 30. In Davao City, the gun ban will be implemented beginning Thursday, June 16, until the 21st. The PNP will also deploy additional personnel to secure Duterte's inauguration on Sunday.
The mass protest is one of the possible scenario we are anticipating. That is why we are deploying more or less 3,500 to 3,700 composite teams of PNP for the inauguration of Vice President-elect Madam Sara and our kababayans then, and those people who will be going to the event are encouraged to at least make a precautionary earlier to travel earlier because border control in some areas in and out of Davao City will be stricter this time.
The Philippine Justice Department will pursue drug charges against detained opposition Senator Laila De Lima. That's despite the earlier recantation of several witnesses against her. Justice Secretary Menardo Guevara says the recantations carry no weight in the proceedings. But De Lima's legal team says the review of evidence in the senator's drug cases is worthless since it's being done by the same panel of prosecutors handling De Lima's cases. The senator has said President Duterte is behind the charges against her for being critical of government's war on drugs. With 2 weeks left in office, President Duterte again defends his bloody war on drugs. He says it is not true. There were extrajudicial killings in government's campaign. Data from the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency show more than 6,000 people have been killed in the drug war, but the ABS-CBN Investigative and Research Group's number is slightly higher at 7,009 deaths.
Yung sinasabi nila, extrajudicial killing, hindi totoo yan. Why do you have to extrajudicial kill a person? May order to the law enforcement agencies is that go out and destroy the apparatus of the drug syndicates. And if you have to kill because you are in danger of being killed, go ahead, unahan mo na. Do not hesitate. And I said, I take full legal responsibility.
Duterte also slammed retired Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio, who described his bloody war as unconstitutional.
How many dysfunctional families are suffering? Kayo nga. Sige daw, how do you solve? Human rights. Pati yan ng justices. Unconstitutional. If it's unconstitutional, so be it. I will do it. Wala akong, I don't give a pinatay ni Duterte, yan. Para sa akin, human carcass ka lang.
The Philippine Commission on Human Rights said in its latest report, government's drug war failed to uphold human rights and even encouraged a culture of impunity. Last year, the International Criminal Court also authorized a full inquiry into government's drug war due to possible crimes against humanity. Dozens of farmers and land reform advocates who were arrested last week in Concepcion in Tarlac will seek the dismissal of the cases against them. They will do so during their arraignment in the pre-trial conference this Friday. Their lawyer says the Agrarian Reform Department itself has asserted it should be the one to handle the issue.
Ito po kasi ng PNP, DILG at DAR Memorandum Circular. Pag may agrarian dispute po, DAR lang po ang pwedeng magpatawag ng assistance ng pulis. Dito po yung nagpatawag ay yung kooperatiba.
At kahit po
tinawagan na po ng assistant secretary ng DAR, yung mga pulis at pati yung kooperatiba na dapat wag na magsampa ng kaso kasi under jurisdiction nila ito, ay hindi po pinakinggan yung assistant secretary. Alam po namin may 10 nakaupo na politiko yung nasa likod ng kooperatiba.
The so-called Tinang 83 have been charged with malicious mischief and illegal assembly for allegedly damaging a disputed land, but they argued they are the beneficiaries of the Comprehensive Agrarian Reform Program and are just waiting for their official installation as legitimate recipients of the land this June. The Commission on Human Rights has launched its own probe into the arrest of the Tinang 83. Let's now talk with the CHR spokesperson, Attorney Jacqueline Deguia. Attorney Deguia, nice to see you again. Thanks for coming to the show. Welcome to the program.
Again, it's a pleasure to be in your show, Carmina, and good afternoon to our televiewers.
Okay, lots to talk about this afternoon. I want to begin with your investigation into the arrest of the farmers, the incident that happened then. As you begin your probe, what will be your guiding principle?
Well, we want to make sure that we maintain impartiality, and we want to make sure that we are able to ferret out the truth, Carmina, as in all other investigations. Our CHR Regional Office Number 3 has commenced their investigation last week. Immediately, I had a quick response operation dispatch. And then over the weekend, our regional office continued their investigation. And then we might mention also that just a day ago, the Tinang 83 went here to the CHR Central Office and formally filed their complaint. And due to the complexity of the issues involved, as well as the case, we have decided to include our CHR Central Office as well in the ongoing investigation.
We're going to talk about the complexities in a bit, but first, let's lay the foundation here. You started your probe even without any formal complaint. This was the initiative of the CHR.
That's right. Under the Constitution, we can actually take nota proprio cognizance of a case. And so this was done on our own initiative based on our monitoring of the news.
And what was it about your monitoring that told you that you should probe and investigate the incident?
Well, there were allegations that surfaced that the arrest was illegal and that undue force was being used. And then, of course, it was also of particular concern to us because the victims here happen to be farmers, and farmers are part of the vulnerable sector or the underprivileged whom we cater to as part of the social justice principle.
And the farmers are not the only ones arrested and detained. There were advocates as well, artists who were supporting the farmers.
That's right, Carmina. There were many as well. And then there were allegations with regards to the manner of arrest. And that's also part of the investigation that we're looking into.
But as you, you know, look at the web that you're going to unravel, where will be your starting point?
Well, it's rooted on the land conflict, Carmina, and that's of particular interest to us because they do say that the land is in dispute, particularly the ownership. We do understand that the Department of Agrarian Reform has issued CLOWACs to some of the farmers, but they haven't been installed as of yet. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if we scrutinize the law, under that situation, there could be no cultivation of the land, nor could there be any act to possess the land yet. And so that's also something we're looking into, and that's the reason why we also want to engage with the Department of Agrarian Reform to see to it that there is a peaceful installation of the farmers and the rightful owners are given access to their lands immediately.
So the allegations that, you know, some of the crops were trampled upon, that these were destroyed by the farmers and the advocates. You're telling us right now, Attorney Deguia, that because it's in dispute, there shouldn't have been those crops there to begin with?
Not to preempt the investigation, Carmina, but objectively speaking, yes. There should be no cultivation of the land yet as long as it is in dispute.
When you talk about this investigation, what are the crucial questions you think that must be answered here?
One, who is the rightful owner? Two, has the process been observed in terms of distributing the CLOWACs as well as the installation of the farmers? Number three, whether the presence of the farmers in the land was legal or not. We do understand that in previous occasions, they were actually tolerated in that particular area and the police was aware of their presence. Number four, whether there were sufficient grounds for the police to intervene, whether the police had jurisdiction over the issue, considering it may be an agrarian dispute. whether there was basis for their subsequent arrest, whether there was necessity in employing force or was there force at all, no, in the first place. And then when they were arrested, were their rights under RA 7438 observed by the police, and whether their conditions during detention was also not contrary, of course, to cruel, inhuman, degrading treatment or punishment. So these are just some of the things that we're looking into, and these are the questions that will have to be answered in the course of our investigation.
You mentioned the police. The authorities were there, but in an incident like this, upon whose order should the police be there? Is it upon the orders of the cooperative, but because we're talking about disputed land, or as the farmers and the advocates allege, land that was already awarded to them, should the police have been there upon the orders of the Department of Agrarian Reform? Attorney.
Theoretically, under law, Carmina, it should be the DAR who should be able to call the police, because under lands which are of agrarian dispute, it will have to be DAR which will have to take cognizance and will have control over the police.
And as you continue on with your investigation, has that question been answered? Who called the police to be present in the area?
It's certainly one of the things that we're looking into, Carmina.
Attorney Diguia, what is clear at this point? I know you've just started your investigation, but this early, what are your findings?
Well, Carmina, it's very apparent that there has been difficulty in installing the farmers. Of course, this is a lament that is nationwide and has been dragging on for several years now. We do commiserate with the plight of many farmers all over the country who are still awaiting for their cloacs and for them to be peacefully installed to their land. Number two, of course, we do know that this is wrought with a lot of difficulty and challenges. It will entail interagency cooperation. And because there are disputing parties, it is then very susceptible to a lot of conflict. And this is where the installation will have to be crucial, where it will have to be peacefully implemented and soonest, no? We have to make sure also, of course, that in case of conflict, which is unavoidable in certain circumstances, then we have to make sure that the parameters of the law are observed.
Do you see that as a form of injustice, Attorney Diguia, that it has been taken a long time for the true owners of the land to be awarded what is duly theirs?
Definitely, Carmina. It's a struggle that has confronted our farmers for years now throughout many administrations. We are hopeful that at this time, we're going to be able to see more farmers gaining access to these lands, which should be properly awarded to them.
You talked about the Department of Agrarian Reform. Let's zero in on that, Attorney Diguia. What will be the role of the DAR in your investigation?
Well, the role of the DAR is very important. They do possess a lot of answers to the vital questions that we have. And since the problem is rooted in the land dispute, they will be very crucial in eventually resolving and finally resolving the dispute. So very important that we're able to engage with DAR and we're able to work with DAR towards the peaceful resolution of this case.
How do you expect to, or what kind of engagement are you expecting from the department, considering that you're also in a way investigating them and their role in the incident?
Yes, Carmina, it may be unknown to the public, but throughout the years, we have been engaging with DAR. They have usually enlisted the help of the Commission on Human Rights, together with other government agencies, usually the BNP and the AFP, in the installation of farmers. We've also tried to conduct dialogues as well as mediations with DAR, DNR, and with many farmers over the years. So it's not unusual for the CHR as well as the DAR to collaborate and to cooperate on these matters.
And talk to us about the sense of urgency here as you investigate this probe and hopefully come out with the findings. Is there a sense of urgency, and will this be beneficial to the farmers and the advocates as they pray for a dismissal of the cases against them, Attorney Deguia?
Definitely, Carmina. Time is of the essence. We want the rightful owners to be installed as soon as possible to their lands, because this impacts their lives, this impacts their livelihood. Also, they have cases pending against them. Of course, we want to guarantee access to remedies. We want to make sure that their sufferings are not unnecessarily prolonged. And we want to make sure that at the end of the day, we're able to ferret out the truth and resolve this case by really determining who are the rightful owners.
Just to clarify, as you investigate, you're not just focusing on the arrest of the farmers or the incident involving the farmers, but the incident as a whole, which involves the advocates and the supporters of the farmers.
That's right, Carmina. We want to make sure that we have a holistic approach. One of the recommendations of the region is also to eventually resolve the case together with the cooperation and collaboration of the DAR. And we also want to look at all aspects of the case. We want to talk with DNP. We want to talk with DAR. We want to talk to the victims as well, together with the other people who were with them at that time.
I want to shift gears now and talk about the past years under the Duterte administration as the new administration of President-elect Bongbong Marcos Jr. eases in. I want to jump off from what President Duterte said. I think it was last night when he said that it is not true that there were extrajudicial killings in government's campaign. He went on to say that it was his order to the law enforcement agencies, go out and destroy the apparatus of the drug syndicates, and if you have to kill because you are in danger of being killed, go ahead, unahan mo na. That's his description. No extrajudicial killings, but that was his description of what happened. How would you describe the killings that happened under the bloody war of this administration against illegal drugs, Attorney Deguia?
Carmina, we have to emphasize quite a few things. One, the deaths are undisputed. We do have a significant number. It's been unparalleled as compared in other administrations. For sure, we have had killings in other administrations, but in terms of rate and scale, it's quite unprecedented. Number two, it necessitated international attention. And we must remember that during the Human Rights Council last year, the Secretary of Justice did commit that there was going to be a review panel by the Department of Justice, certainly because there was an acknowledgement that there may be a reason for the government as well to look into the allegations of extrajudicial killings. And as we understand, that review panel is still ongoing right now. Number three, the CHR came out with its own final report on the campaign against drugs. And we did emphasize that we did see that there was intent to kill in these cases, that there was no danger that would have necessitated the police to have used unnecessary and disproportionate force, and that there were some inconsistencies, and the non-cooperation of the police themselves was a challenge in the conduct of our investigations. These are just some of the findings that we've had. But definitely, it all boils down to the fact that many of these deaths could have been avoided had there been strict adherence to the rule of law, because there was no cogent or apparent reason for the police to have used force, because they were neither in danger, which would necessitate self-defense or defense of a stranger. The only grounds in the revised penal code that are allowed by law for the police to have used force, and that makes it extra in a sense. But we must emphasize that at the end of the day, the government has made a strong commitment to the Human Rights Council through the DOJ review panel, and for us to effectively counter these allegations or statements uttered last night, then the DOJ review panel will have to continue reviewing these cases so that there may be a final determination whether or not extrajudicial killings did indeed happen during the previous years.
Attorney Diguia, you know, throughout the years under this administration, the commission itself has not been spared from criticisms coming from President Duterte himself. How would you describe how the commission has transformed itself under this administration?
It certainly wasn't easy, Carmina, during the past years, only because there were frequent attacks against the Commission on Human Rights, and there was too much misconception about the mandate of the CHR. It was a struggle in the beginning to let the public understand, together with the government, that that is our role under the 1987 Constitution, that that is our mandate, and that we have to remain faithful to our mandate. But it's also been a challenge for us to make sure that we are able to maintain our objectivity as well as our impartiality, and couple that with the balance that was necessary in making sure that we're still able to engage with government. Because at the end of the day, our recommendations will be useless if, for example, government does not listen to us. So we've also tried during the years to make sure that there is balance in the work that we do, that there's proper understanding of our mandate, but we're still able to remain faithful to our mandate without shirking away from our responsibilities and having to act upon all of those pressing issues throughout the past 6-7 years.
And as we wrap up, how would you describe the work ahead of you, knowing that there's a new administration waiting in the wings? The son of the late dictator, Ferdinand Marcos, will be the 17th president of the Philippines. And his father's administration is widely known to have committed thousands of human rights violations. How do you think that'll impact the work that's ahead of you?
But Armina, we try to remain optimistic. The words of the incoming president holds a lot of promise, because he did say that he should not be judged by his ancestors, but he should be judged by his actions. And then we take particular notice of the statements and commitments that were just recently uttered also, that there will be strong adherence to human rights, that there will be protection to human rights. And we are hopeful that under this administration, the government will continue to be the prime mover in respecting and promoting human rights, and that they will properly understand the role and the mandate of the CHR. And we'll certainly strengthen it, because under the United Nations Joint Program, one of the commitments also of the government is to maintain a strong, credible, independent CHR.
Attorney Jacqueline Diguia, spokesperson of the Philippine Commission on Human Rights. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining us today. Take care and keep safe.
Always a pleasure, Carmina. Thank you.
And from there, we're going to take a break now. Still ahead, Japan passes a bill that could land cyberbullies in prison. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back with more news. The competitiveness ranking of the Philippines improves this year. The country climbed 4 spots in the annual Global Competitiveness Report by the Switzerland-based International Institute for Management Development, from 52nd place to 48th out of 63 economies. That's the country's highest ranking in 2 years, which the IMD attributed to improvements in its economic performance. But the Philippines continues to lag behind its neighbors, placing 13th among the 14 Asia-Pacific economies in the index for the 5th straight year. Other than economic performance, IMD also based its ranking on 3 other factors: government efficiency, business efficiency, and infrastructure. Concerns are raised over Russia's offer to help the Philippines with its energy needs. An energy official believes Manila could get caught in the crossfire between Moscow and the West if it accepts Russia's offer. Alvin Ilchico reports.
Militant groups keep on pressing government to remove the excise tax on fuel amid rising petroleum prices.
Para lahat mag-benefits, ang kailangan galawin ng gobyerno ay pigilan yung mataas na buwis sa produktong petrolyo para hindi lang yung driver at operator makinabang kundi buong mamamayan.
The Russian ambassador offered help to the incoming administration to supply the Philippines with oil and gas from Russia. For DOE Undersecretary Gerardo Argiza, it's possible the U.S. will take issue if the country decides to get Russian oil.
If we do that, definitely the U.S. and its allies will call the attention of the Philippines. It's not as simple as it seems. It's a good idea, Alvin, but we need further review.
Another issue to be considered is the distance between the Philippines and Russia.
If ever they give a discount, hopefully they give a discount, maybe the sailing costs will have to be considered. Now, I think Russia has many ports, no? So I think some of their ports are close to China, so baka konti lang ang sailing time yan.
Aside from diplomatic and logistical issues, there are also long-term contracts from existing suppliers. In the Philippines, the oil industry is regulated, meaning the private sector holds all supply and controls prices without government intervention. Only Petron has the refinery, which can process crude. The rest of the players only import finished product from neighboring countries.
Assuming bumili ang government, there's no mechanism to distribute, di ba? Before, the government owns Petron, no? Pero wala na. So wala tayong conduit to bring it to the public.
It depends on whether the refiner here wants that and also whether their plant can process it.
ABS-CBN has tried to get a statement from Petron regarding the compatibility of Russian crude oil on its refinery, but the company has not yet responded. Alvin Ochico, ABS-CBN News.
Norway's envoy says they can bring in some 50,000 high-paying jobs to the Philippines should the country allow foreigners to have a majority stake in renewable energy firms. ABS-CBN's Katrina Domingo now joins us on the line for more on this. Kat, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. Norway wants to increase its imprint on the renewable energy sector in the Philippines. That's the statement of Norwegian ambassador in the Philippines, Bjorn Jansen, earlier this morning. Jansen says investors can bring in some 50,000 good-paying jobs in the country should foreigners be allowed to have a majority stake in renewable energy companies. Carmina, in his meeting with President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr., Jansen mentioned this development and said that if only foreign companies would be allowed to have a majority of the equities in these types of investments, then the Philippines can certainly benefit from billions of dollars in foreign investments as well as high-paying jobs for its citizens. Jansen said that the offshore wind business is expected to become an important new sector that could present great opportunities for the Philippines in the future. He notes that Norway has one of the big projects in this sector right now, and it is looking to invest in the Philippines for a plenty supply of energy. He noted that the Philippines is growing in economy and energy consumption is increasing. So offshore wind is really one of the Philippines' best bets for the future. Aside from talks about renewable energy, Carmina, Jansen also mentioned that he and President-elect Marcos discussed peace talks with communist rebels during their meeting, but he, however, declined to elaborate details of their exchange about the Communist Party of the Philippines and instead noted that they thoroughly discussed Norway's engagement in the decommissioning of Bangsamoro forces. If we recall, Carmina, Norway served as a third-party facilitator in peace negotiations between the Philippine government and the Communist Party of the Philippines and even hosted the preliminary peace talks between President Rodrigo Duterte's negotiating panel and communist leaders in Oslo back in 2016. Carmina, aside from Jansen, other ambassadors who visited Marcos this morning include Finnish Ambassador Juha Pico, Hungarian Ambassador Titania Tost, Romanian Ambassador Raduta Matashe, and right now we are expecting to have a press conference with South African Ambassador Bartina Netshitenze. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Katrina Domingo there joining us on the line. Take care, Kat. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, crisis hits Sri Lanka, asking civil servants to take an extra day off each week to grow crops in a bid to forestall a looming food shortage. Public employees will have every Friday off for the next 3 months without a pay cut and will be provided the necessary facilities to conduct agricultural activities in their backyards. The move is also seen to reduce fuel consumption by cutting down commutes. The nation's unprecedented economic downturn has left several staple foods in short supply, along with fuel and medicine. The government also encouraging the public sector to find jobs abroad and send remittances home. Sri Lanka is laboring under a critical shortage of foreign currency and has defaulted on its $51 billion foreign debt. Japan passes a bill to make online insults punishable by jail time. The bill was passed Monday following debates on how to strike a balance between tougher regulations and freedom of expression. In the measure, violators face up to a year in prison and a fine of up to 300,000 yen. This major step toward tackling cyberbullying comes after a 22-year-old professional wrestler was believed to have committed suicide in May 2020 after receiving hateful messages on social media. Hong Kong's famous Jumbo floating restaurant towed out of the city after years of revitalization efforts went nowhere. The restaurant, which was opened in 1976, was featured in multiple Cantonese and Hollywood films. It also drew visitors from Queen Elizabeth II to Tom Cruise. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And before we go, sad news for the BTS Army. The K-pop supergroup is disbanding temporarily as its members focus on solo pursuits. BTS dropped the bombshell during a streamed event, which is part of a celebration that marks their 9th anniversary as a group. BTS has said they were going on short breaks before, first in 2019 and later in December of 2021. BTS is the first all-South Korean act to reign over Billboard's U.S. top singles chart and one of the few acts since the Beatles to release four albums that hit number one. The group is credited with generating billions of dollars for the South Korean economy. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.